In our study today, I would like for us to turn to Ecclesiastes chapter 5, and that's where we will begin our study. Keep thy foot when thou goest to the house of God. And so that is the thought that I want to occupy us today in our study, and it is the first words that we find here in Ecclesiastes chapter 5. Keep thy foot when thou goest to the house of God, for to draw nigh to hear is better than to give the sacrifice of fools, for they know not that they do evil. Let me go ahead and read the other verses in this little paragraph. Verse 2, be not rash with thy mouth, and let not thy heart be hasty to utter anything before God, for God is in heaven, and thou upon earth. Therefore let thy words be few. For a dream cometh with a multitude of business, and a fool's voice with a multitude of words. When thou vowest a vow unto God, defer not to pay it, for he hath no pleasure in fools. Pay that which thou vowest. Better is it that thou shouldest not vow, than that thou shouldest vow and not pay. Suffer not thy mouth to cause thy flesh to sin, neither say thou before the angel or the judge that it was an error. Wherefore should God be angry at thy voice and destroy the work of thy hands? For in the multitude of dreams there are vanities and in many words, but fear thou God. I was asked by the elders to preach several lessons, and I have preached several lessons in connection with topics that they wanted me to talk about. This is one of them. I'm going to talk about our worship of God, things that we need to observe in connection with that worship. And I want you to listen very carefully. And as I talk about these subjects today, I'm going to mention some things that we need to take note of. And I want to be reasonable in what I say, but I also want you to be reasonable also. And I want you to listen carefully to the things that I'm going to say and evaluate them fairly. Don't make assumptions that I'm saying something that I'm not saying. But listen very carefully to the thoughts that we have. Keep your foot when you go to the house of God. I'm quoting here a sort of a paraphrase. When you go to the house of God, says Koheleth. Now this quotation that I'm making here refers to the writer of Ecclesiastes as one who addresses the group. So he's called Koheleth. That doesn't matter. When thou goest to the house of God, says Koheleth, take heed to thy step, well reflecting whither thou goest and how thou hast there to appear. Worshipping God is serious business. That's one of the basic points that I want to make today in our study. Worshipping God is very serious business. And when he says, keep your foot, he means watch your step. That the matter of worshiping God is a very serious matter. It is not to be taken lightly. And there are grave errors and mistakes that we can fall into so far as attitudes are concerned in connection with our worship of God. To draw near to hear is better than the sacrifice of fools. One may come to worship God, to relate to Him, to hear His instructions. Now, this is good. What I'm going to show you, however, is what the writer is warning us against doing. So when he says to keep your foot, to watch your foot, and he explains to draw near to hear is better than the sacrifice of fools. I really want you to think about this because the thought is so powerful and so clear, but it takes a little bit of time and meditation for us to see the point that is being made. Now, when somebody comes to worship God, and this would include you and me today, we come to worship God, we come to relate to Him, we come to hear His instruction, we come to worship Him. God is to be at the center of our thoughts as we are gathered here today, and I do appreciate the songs, and the words that were on the screen before our services began. Everything has been so appropriate today in connection with the subject that we're studying this morning. So one may come to worship God, to think of relating to God. How do I relate to God? What is my relationship with Him? We come to God to hear His instructions. Or one may come to go through motions, to offer up meaningless sacrifices. And this is what the writer has in mind here when he warns us. The idea is that merely showing up is what is important. Doesn't matter when. Doesn't matter what I do when I get here. Just showing up is what is important. I can sleep all the way through the service. I can sit there and my mind be 1,000 miles away. Now, when the writer says, keep your foot when you go to the house of God, that's not what he's talking about. He is saying, you better be alert to what you're doing. And when he says, for to draw nigh to hear is better than to give the sacrifice of fools, when he's talking about giving the sacrifice of fools, he is talking about the attitude, I'm just going to do the stuff God has said to do. That's all that matters. Doesn't matter whether I'm thinking about it. Doesn't matter whether I am aware of the meaning of it. I'm just going through the motions. And as long as I do the stuff God has said to do, then that's all that matters. It can be a mechanical thing. See, that would be the sacrifice of a fool that the writer is talking about. The sacrifice of a fool would be the person who is unthinking and uncaring, and he comes and brings his sacrifice, but the sacrifice does not mean anything to him. It has no spiritual significance to him. And what I'm trying to do is to say that, first of all, we must be careful that our worship of God does not become that kind of thing. And I think it can become that kind of thing. It is so easy for it to become that kind of thing. And He is warning us against doing that. Just mechanically doing the things that God has said to do, that's all that matters. And the result is ignorance that results in the doing of evil. This also is in chapter 5, 1. For they know not that they do evil. I think that a better translation is that they do evil because they know not. They do not learn. They are not aware. They're not listening. They're not profiting. They're not gaining anything. And therefore they go away without being better, without being improved. And you know, when we do attend to worship God, if we're just sailing through without letting anything touch us as we go, nothing is making an impression on us, then we don't learn and we don't improve. And they do evil because they know not. And so the result is ignorance that results in the doing of evil. And the whole point dealt with in 5, 1 through 7 is casual, ritualistic worship. And we must be careful, so careful, that that is not the case. It is so easy to be distracted. And as an audience, as participants in worship, we have a responsibility to focus our minds and not allow ourselves to be distracted by the things that are about us. Now that's Ecclesiastes 5 and verse 1. Next, I would like for us to go to another passage. This one is in Exodus 19, where the children of Israel had arrived at Mount Sinai, and God was about to talk to them. So in Exodus 19, verses 10 and 11, the Lord said unto Moses, go unto the people and sanctify them today and tomorrow, and let them wash their garments and be ready against the third day. For the third day the Lord will come down in the sight of all the people upon Mount Sinai. All right, now listen. What did he say do? Moses, tell the people to sanctify them today and tomorrow. Let them wash their garments. Why? What is the big deal? The big deal is they're coming before God. And when they came before God, there was no one that... I can't see how anyone could have been there on that occasion and not have been very impressed with the fact they are before God. Well, what we need to remember is that when we come here to worship, we are likewise coming before God. And the Hebrew writer makes this interesting point. He makes the interesting point that in Hebrews chapter 12, that if the people back there in the day of Mount Sinai did not escape when they did not hearken to the voice that spoke to them from the mountaintop, how do you think we are going to escape if we refuse to hear Him who speaks from heaven itself? So even though it was an awesome sight for God to speak from the top of Mount Sinai back there, and anyone standing at the foot of that mountain would have indeed been afraid and filled with awe and everything, though we don't have God speaking from a mountain that is trembling and quaking today, we do have one who is speaking to us from heaven itself. So that the Hebrew writer is making the point that even though the building's not shaking here, that we have an even greater responsibility to stand in reverence and awe before Him who speaks unto us from heaven. So it is impressive to me that Moses was telling the people, sanctify yourselves. And in much of what I am saying today, the bottom line is this, that the day of worship needs to be a day that is special. And the thing that is most special about this day should not be what we're going to get to do this afternoon. It should not be where we're going to get to go and eat lunch. It should not be where we're going to get to go and have a good time this evening with people that we enjoy being with. No, the Lord's Day is to be the most special day in our week because that is the day that we come before the Lord to worship Him. The people were going to appear before the Lord. They were to make ready. And I know that the commandments in this passage have to do with ceremonial cleanness. But even those laws had the idea of emphasizing how special it was to come before the Lord. And so whereas we don't have ceremonial laws of cleanness we have to observe as we come before the Lord, we do need to gain the principle and to lock that principle into our minds that coming before the Lord is a very special thing. And therefore, we need to think about how we come before the Lord. There are several areas that I would like for us to think about now. What, and that should be what, do your personal efforts to worship reveal? Now then, please, I want to set some ground rules in place here. I know that we have some people who are very old and they cannot make it to all of our services because they are old and infirm. I understand that. And more importantly, I believe God understands that. We have people who either have temporary illnesses that incapacitate them at a given time. We have some people with ongoing illness that from time to time makes it impossible for them to be here. I understand that, okay? Now I want to make sure I understand that. So I'm not talking about those situations. Not at all. I'm not talking about any kind of a situation which necessity brings upon one. So I'm not talking about that. And I'm going to make a few comments about dress. And in connection with those comments about dress, I would like to make the point I am not about to set some kind of a dress code. I have no interest in doing that, and I have no scripture that would enable me to do that. When someone does not have any real fine clothes, I'm not saying they ought to wear fine clothes. they ought to wear what they've got. So in the comments that I'm going to make, I am not at all meaning to be unreasonable in anything that I say about that. But I do want to look, first of all, at one's dress as it reflects upon my attitude toward God. Okay? When I come to worship God, do I give Him the honor that I would give if I went in for a job interview? Well, maybe I should give more attention to the job interview than I do God. What about that? No, I really believe that when I think about God, I need to give my attention to Him. When I come to worship God, do I give Him the honor I would give if I went for a job interview, a wedding, a funeral? Does this mean I must wear a suit? And the answer is no. But I do believe that there is a sense in which what I wear reflects the way I feel about God. And the preparation that I make reflects the way I feel about God. And so, rather than set any certain standard, I'm not trying to do that. I'm not going to do that. But I do believe that in the way I conduct myself, I can indicate that worship is no big deal to me. Or I can indicate that this is a very special occasion for me. And that's the point that I want to make. So, I'm not saying to wear a suit, but do I need to look like I'm ready for a hog killing? Or that what I have come for is a basketball game? Now, surely we can have a kind of a happy medium. And if I come and my dress appears to be just, I haven't given any thought at all to what I'm doing today. I think we can beat that. And I think we can pull ourselves together a little bit more and say, I have given thought to what I'm doing today. I'm worshiping God. And so that's the point that I want to make here in connection with the dress. Sometimes someone comes straight from work, and it's either come in what they have or don't come. In that case, come. And I know some of you have done that, and I want you to know I appreciate it. I want you to know I appreciate that. I've known some of you that you work till the last moment because that's what you're required to do, but you take the time to leave that work, come and worship. I appreciate that. And in that case, I think you are showing, because of what you've done, that the worship of God means a lot to you. But you didn't have the time. You didn't have the opportunity to do any differently. What if I have the time to do differently and I don't? What does it indicate? I think we need to think about that. In the one case, the clothes worn shows that one puts the worship of God above all else. In the other case, it indicates that the worship of God is no big deal, and there's no need for me to make it special. Let's think about attendance. There are some people that only come on Sunday morning. Now, do you remember what I said a while ago? I realize there are people who, because of age or illness, are not able to come to all the services, or in some cases, to any of the services. I understand that very well. Because the last year or two of my own mother-in-law's life, and the last good while, year or two, I suppose, of my own mother's life, they were not able to attend. So I say again, I understand that. But there are people who only come on Sunday morning when they could come at other times. They could do it. And some have the attitude that Sunday morning is the only service that is important because that's when the Lord's Supper is observed. Thus, the singing and the praying and the studying God's Word that are done otherwise are not deemed of enough importance to bother with. Those activities don't seem to be important enough to compel our attention. But every worship service is a matter of honoring God. Therefore, it should not be viewed as a do I have to thing, but as a do I get to thing. If you were going to have some kind of a celebration of your birthday or some kind of a celebration, sometimes we have celebrations that give honor to a person. And even suppose it was your parents. And so you're going to have this little thing in honor of your parents. And so you're telling someone about it. Just wanting them to know, hoping that they can come. And suppose they say to you, well, I guess I could if I had to. Well, I guess I could if I had to. Well, do I have to? Your tendency would be to say, no. No, you don't have to. In fact, your tendency might almost be to say, in fact, I'd rather you not. And that was God's attitude also. Isaiah chapter 1, let me turn to that one and read that. Isaiah chapter 1, verse 11. What unto me is the multitude of your sacrifices, saith the Lord? I've had enough of the burnt offerings of rams and the fat of fed beasts. And I delight not in the blood of bullocks or of lambs or of he-goats. When you come to appear before me, who hath required this at your hand to trample my courts? So that is also the attitude that God would have. So we really need to think about this matter of my attendance. And we need to be very careful that we do not put sports or entertainment on an equal level or ahead of worship. I want to tell you that whatever you do before your children, that's going to be the lesson that they get. And if you let things like entertainment, sports, and other things in life take you away, and you choose them instead of worshiping, your children will pick up on that, and they will get the lesson about what your priorities are. Be not deceived. You will not get away with doing this. You may think you will. You will not get away with it. Your children will observe what you do much more than they will observe what you say. And if we're not careful, we will show that what is supposed to be first is really second or third or fourth. Some people drop in only for the Lord's Supper and then they're on their way for the fun activities that will occupy the rest of the day. I know that we don't have many people that do that, if any. But I do know that there are some people who have the attitude that they go on vacation, the only thing they've got to take care of is drop in for that 5 or 10 minutes, observe the Lord's Supper, and then that barrier is out of the way, you see. That obstacle in the way of a day of fun and frolic is out of the way. Then you've got the whole day that you can just have. Well, now, wait a minute. What day is this? This is the Lord's day. Whose day is it? Just drop in for the Lord's Supper. Almost make it a drive-in thing. Problem here is first that we are treating what we owe God as a hurdle or an obstacle to the fun day that we've planned. And conscience bothers just enough that one feels guilty not to take the Lord's Supper, so he drops by, does that, and presto, he's fulfilled his obligation to God. And so, as we said a moment ago, God's response would be, when you come to appear before me, who hath required this at your hand to trample my courts? Now, I want to also utter this point for you to think about. This is not the preacher. This is not me saying that, you know. I think you need to understand that. Someone could say, well, if you don't want me to come, I just won't be here. No, that's not me. This is not me. I'm not saying that. These are God's words. not my words. These are God's words. And we're going to have to deal with those. We can't just write those off and say, well, if you don't want me to come, I just won't be here then. There's going to be a day when we're going to stand before the judgment seat of Christ. And we will then face these things and we will deal with them and we will not be able to say, well, if you don't like me, I'll take my marbles and go home. When you're standing before the judgment, you won't have the option of taking your marbles and going home. You will have to deal with God. We must deal with God. That's what we're going to have to face. So the Lord's Supper should not be treated as a good luck charm that if I have it, then nothing else matters. That is not right. There are things that happen by accident to make somebody late now and then. Obviously, I'm not talking about being late in those circumstances. That can happen to anybody, no matter how careful they may be. I'm talking about people who are always and ever late. They're late to get the children to school. They're late to get by the bank. They are late to get to the grocery store. They are late. There are people who are late. That's their middle name. I've known some of those people. I think I'd have to say some of them are my relatives. They don't live by a clock. But they're also late for worship. There are people that are late for worship. They're late if they're teaching a class. This kind of lateness is the result of habit and can be corrected only by changing the habit and the attitudes that underlie the habit. And it goes back again to the idea of our worship of God. Our worship of God needs to be special enough that we plan for it so that we arrive on time. When one is not on time, it is a distraction. He's missed the opening words of the lesson. He's missed the first acts of worship that are engaged in. It is as if, oh, well, that's all right. I got there and, you know, I got the rest of it. Well, what about the part you didn't get? See, this is not a catch-as-catch-can thing. Worship of God is not supposed to be that way. And being late can be an expression of the lack of emphasis that needs to be put upon God. When one gets there late, he's not had time to prepare his mind for worship. And during worship, health problems sometimes require one to go out. That is understandable. And this morning, I think we've had that to occur. And I'm very sorry. And that happens. Health problems require one to go out. But often, it is only 5 minutes into worship or 5 minutes before it's over that we have to get up and go out. Now please, again, understand, I'm not talking about emergencies. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about perfectly healthy children, perfectly healthy young adults, that 5 minutes after worship has started, or 5 minutes after the lesson has started, has to get up and go out. It may be a health problem. And maybe you've got a temporary health problem. You have to do that. That's okay. That's understandable. But I don't believe that all of it is health problems. I think part of it is go out and get a drink of water before you dry up and wither away. When 5 more minutes wouldn't see you dry up and wither away. You need to be careful about this kind of casual getting up and going out and coming back and getting up and going out, when it is really not serving any vital purpose. It is distracting, and there's usually a lot of it. Again, if it is because of a health problem or to take care of a baby, don't you hesitate to go. Absolutely. You go when you have to go. But examine your attitude and be sure about why you're going. Are you really engaged in the worship? And what's going on? Are you listening carefully to what's taking place? If you're going out to relieve monotony, then it's an attitude thing, not a health thing. And I can't make this judgment call, but I am going to warn. I'm going to put it on the table for us to think about. And I think that our parents are doing a good job of caring for their children during the worship services. But I do strongly think that this needs to be emphasized. By the time children are up to 7 or 8 years old, unless they are sick, they should not be allowed to sleep during services or to read little fiction books or to play. They're old enough by then to begin to learn to listen and to be trained to listen. The longer they do this kind of behavior, the sleep, the read little fiction books, the play, the longer they do this, the more they're being trained to believe that worship is for grown-ups and not for them. So in all that I've said, the emphasis is that we think about the matter of coming before the Lord and we ask how our behavior reflects our attitude toward worshiping God. Our worship needs to be a privilege and a joy rather than a requirement and a drudgery. So I hope that you will take these thoughts under advisement.